Following on from the reflections this morning about the conditioning nature, the conditioned nature of our experience, and how different aspects of our experience condition each other or influence each other, interweave back and forth between body and mind, between physical and mental processes. I wanted to explore this conditioning function, or those mental processes that are really involved in this conditioning, constructing nature of what happens in our minds. This is the area in the Buddhist teaching of what is called mental formations, sankharas. And sankharas is one of five physical and mental processes that the Buddha described that make up this human being, that interweave to do the processes of life, experience the processes of life, doing both, actually. These processes of these five aggregates is the name of this list. Both are described as the processes by which things happen and basically the results of those processes, the things that happen in our minds and bodies. So just to start briefly with a little framing of these, of the five aggregates. The term aggregate itself is the translation of this word sankhara. And in the Pali, apparently, it's a very simple, non-technical word, meaning basically something like group or heap or bundle. The term aggregate sounds kind of technical, and so we may rebel against some technical teaching, but it's basically the Buddha describing this is one way to slice up the way a human being functions. Another way is through the six sense bases, which we've been talking about a lot, and he also talked a lot about, you know, the processes of, you know, the sense bases and the processes associated with those sense bases. So the eye and sight, the ear and sound, the nose and smell, etc. And so the sense bases is one kind of way to slice up the pie of our experience, and the aggregates is another way to look at the processes at work in our system. And in the six sense bases, five of the six are physical sense bases: eye, ear, nose, tongue, and skin. So the kind of the weight of that is on the physical processes, and then there's the sense door of the mind to bring in the mental processes. In this teaching, there's one representation of the body, basically form. That form is a process of body. And then the other four are processes of mind. And so this is really where the Buddha starts to tease apart the different functions of our mind and begin to look at how these processes interweave and interrelate. So the five aggregates are form, the body, basically bodily processes, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. So just a brief overview of these five. The body is this physical form. And the sensations that make up that. And so the Buddha talks about the form being largely in the terrain of these four elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And the sensation level of those elements is what this body, the process of body, experiences. So we experience hardness, pressure, hardness and density, solidity in the area of earth. We experience vibration, tingling, pulsing, movement in the area of air. We experience moisture, dryness in the air, the aspect of water, and we experience heat and coolness in the aspect of fire. Temperature range. And so this is the body process, the aggregate of body. Body, this form, includes the form that we that's in our own body. And then my understanding is that also, you know, this bell has form. and not only that, you know, the sound of the bell is form striking the ear. And this corresponds actually with physics because, you know, the striking of the bell results in a compression of air, which is a physical process, and that movement through the air, another physical process, impacts the eardrum, a physical thing, and then that reverberates and creates the sound. So this is just the area of form. Then feeling is the area or the aspect of whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Just the simple feeling tone of experience. And all experience has some feeling tone to it. This is understood to be one of those universal phenomenon. Every moment of experience has one of these flavors to it. Pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Perception, Alexis spoke about this a little bit yesterday. Perception is the process by which we recognize experience. So, you know, we look out into this room, so the easiest way to talk about perception, well, there's a couple of ways, but one easy way to talk about perception is understanding that, you know, as we look out into this room, we see lots of things, lots of objects that we're familiar with. We see chairs and zabutons and people and lights and walls and that experience of seeing seeing these objects, the process of perception is intimately connected to that. What our sight does, our sight basically, as Alexis said yesterday, just sees form and color. And from that form and color, there's, you know, shape, size, color, form, like this zabuton has a square brown shape. And so that's one level of perception, is brown and square. And then in the level up from that is zabuton, that we recognize what it is. So this process of perception is very much based in memory, that it's kind of like this, the process of mind that categorizes and recognizes, oh yep, seen that before, that's what that is. And this happens all without our doing, but it is a process that, you know, we meet experience over and over again and we begin to recognize it. So this is the process. There's the process of perception, which I would say is kind of that file cabinet or that pattern matching process that goes on in the mind when we encounter something. The mind kind of searches through its memory banks and says, oh, I'll pull that one out. That's the concept that goes with that. So the process of that is this aggregate of perception, but also the recognition itself, the result of that process, that's often the easiest place to start to see this working. The result of that process is that perception. And so we have an easy place to begin to see this is with sound. and we sit here quietly with our eyes closed and we hear a sound, and immediately our minds, there's the sound, the actual sound of something that hits our ear, and then our mind will recognize it or identify it, perhaps as bird. And there's a way that perception, for me, it's easier to see this kind of perception, the hearing as perception, because often perception happens as a thought, a kind of a subtle form of thought, and often even as a visual image. So we're sitting here, we hear a sound, and we see an image of a bird in our minds. That's the perception of that sound. Our mind recognizes it as bird, and maybe even in that image has already pointed to us whether it's a jay or a crow. You know, our image is already including that information, that level of perception. So the process of perception is this recognition, and we can see the result of that process as we recognize what we are perceiving, what we are recognizing. Then volitional formations is this area that I'd really like to explore in more depth today. It's basically mental processes that include some form of volition, of choice, or intention. And this includes a lot of what goes on in our minds. It includes pretty much the range of our emotional states. It includes mind states such as concentration, mindfulness. It includes qualities or functions of mind like wisdom, love, compassion. All of these are mental formations. The word sankhara, again, this aggregate refers both to the process of the forming and what has been formed. The word sankhara actually represents both of these. It both can be understood to mean something along the lines of, well, the sam and kara are, the sam part means together, and the kara part means something like putting, to you know, creating or something like that. So those two together mean putting together. And the understanding of those two words can either be that which puts together or that which has been put together. So it's both the process of the putting together, the constructing nature of our minds, and a kind of the recognition of what has been put together. So it's often easiest in looking at these aggregates to see the thing that has the result of the process as opposed to the process. So the result of this constructing process, you know, may be the experience of anger, for instance. So that is a mental formation, the experience of anger, the experience of love. So our emotions, our mind states, most of them have a volitional element to them. And we recognize them as a mind state. And so that's recognizing this aspect of mental formations. We begin to recognize these mind states. The active part of mental formations is the constructing power that these mind states have. And this is a little bit of what I was pointing to this morning, that these states of mind condition or begin to shape other areas of our experience. And so, simple example, anger, for instance. Anger, there's a teaching in the Samyutta Nikaya that basically describes the mental formation aggregate as the process by which the aggregates are constructed. So that's a little complicated, but it sounds a little complicated, but basically the understanding is that the mental formations are the engine which build and create the other elements of our experience. And so the language goes something like, and what does do volitional formations construct? They construct form. They construct conditioned form. They construct conditioned feeling. They construct conditioned perception. They construct conditioned mental formations, and they construct conditioned consciousness. So it's described in that text as the engine through which all of the other areas of our experience are formed and shaped. So anger, for instance, if we explore how anger shapes us, the arising of anger will shape our physical form. It may create a distortion of our facial expression, for instance. It can create pressure and heat in our body. So that's the constructing nature of anger, constructing form in its image, in a way. It constructs feeling. Mostly when we are experiencing anger, there's unpleasant experience. It constructs perception. When we are angry, we tend to perhaps perceive the world through this frame of anger and perceive things through that angry lens. So seeing certain things, not other things, as we have filters on our experience, we take in certain information and we don't take in other information. We tend to take in information that confirms our views, our biases. And so if there's an angry filter, we may tend to go around finding things that confirm why I should be angry. So that's a perceptual process at work, that the mind perceiving things from this perspective of anger. That also is a way in which to understand how anger conditions consciousness. Not only do we tend to perceive things that in line with that anger, like for instance, if we are angry at somebody, we may perceive them as being hostile to us, whether they are or not. We may kind of go through the world with this kind of filter of hostility and take in hostility, whether it's there or not. So that would be the perception side of it. And then this anger also conditions consciousness in that through that filter, some things are, we become conscious of some things and not others. And so this is a very powerful aspect of our consciousness, of our minds, and this the way consciousness and mental formations work together, that when we have a bias, a view, a belief, a mind state, a reactive state of mind, it conditions what we become conscious of. So what consciousness takes in. Certain things are not seen, tend to be things that are not in line with what we are, kind of like our mind orients to look for certain things that corroborate our views, our opinions, that match up with our reactivity. And then anger tends to construct more anger. So in this way, this mental formation of anger constructs and conditions all of the other processes of body and mind. And so it's a very potent force in our minds, these mental formations, and well worth getting familiar with, exploring, investigating, so that we can understand the understanding of these processes at work. mean, when we're not aware of these processes at work, they are just kind of running the show. And when awareness begins to meet and recognize these processes at work, there's an opportunity for something different to happen. Different choices can be made, partly because the wholesome mental formation of mindfulness and wisdom have an opportunity to construct something different. And so it's very important to begin to see these and see also this, the mind begins to get an education here around what mental formations construct suffering and what mental formations begin to construct leading away from suffering. And with that information, as we've been saying, wisdom begins to gravitate towards those mental formations that take us away from suffering and begins to release and let go of those mental formations that tend to construct more suffering. So the volitional formations themselves are a lot of what we've been looking at in our practice. As I said, it comprises, it's a huge area of our experience. Anytime we're looking at reactive emotions, we're exploring this terrain of mental formations. And this morning, the exploration around, and how do these things interrelate with other processes? How does the body impact the mind? And how does the mind impact the body? How does the mind impact the mind? This is essentially looking at this terrain of the conditioning power of our mental formations. And so the volitional formations are those states of mind, those mental processes connected with some form of motivation, intention. Some aspect of that. So this includes, I'm just going to name some of the things that are mental formations. I've named some of them, but just now in a block, it includes our emotions, all of our emotions. It includes our thoughts. It includes what we might call states of mind. Such as boredom, things that we might not necessarily think of as emotion, boredom or sleepiness, restlessness. It includes states of mind like concentration, mindfulness, equanimity, concentration, calm. It includes wisdom, compassion. It also includes this terrain of beliefs and views. Views and beliefs have a very potent constructing power in our experience. They don't necessarily have what we would think of as an emotional charge to us. They seem to be just how we take the world to be. But they have a very powerful constructing power. Ignorance, delusion are mental formations. And so as I mentioned this morning, it's really useful to get to know, especially when we start to see certain mental formations appearing frequently for us, it's useful to start to be curious about what is the function of this? What's the nature of this experience? What's the nature of aversion? What's the nature of greed? What's the nature of compassion? And in that exploration, basically it's just what we've been talking about. We've been talking a lot about meeting our experience. And in that meeting, as the mindfulness gets more continuous, we start to see how these states of mind impact or inform other areas of our experience. And so we see, I went through anger, for instance, in how it impacts other areas of our experience. love, for instance, has different conditioning kind of power to it. It may make the body feel light. The feeling of love generally has a pleasant quality, and it creates feelings of connection with others. It's got a connected quality to it. We tend to perceive experience with more generosity of heart and mind when we have a feeling of love in our hearts. We may perceive other people as more friendly, for instance. And it creates the conditions for connection, for more love. So we get to know, just through this being with, when the continuity of mindfulness is stronger and we can simply open to our experience, we begin to see not only the experience of the mind state itself, the love, but how it impacts our other areas of experience. So we see this conditioning power of our mental formations. Mental formations are themselves conditioned, as I mentioned. You know, anger tends to condition more anger. And often in practice, we can start to see, you know, how the mental formations relate, again, to some of the other aggregates. So a very common recognition and understanding that we begin to touch into is how unpleasant experience tends to condition the mind towards not liking. Maybe further towards anger or irritation or hostility. And so that kind of conditioning power of the mind doesn't just simply leave it as feeling, but follows on from that. And we can see that fairly easily in our experience, begin to notice the connection between unpleasant experience and this tendency that we have to move towards aversion, pleasant experience, and the tendency we have to move towards greed, wanting to have, wanting to keep. Now, the feeling itself, the unpleasant, the pleasant quality itself, it is a condition in experience, but it doesn't inherently lead to aversion. Because we can see that sometimes we can notice unpleasant experience, and it's just unpleasant experience. And actually, there's not a feeling of any kind of reactivity around it. And so what is it that's going on at the time when that tendency to move towards aversion happens, when unpleasant experience is there? The Buddhist teaching points to ignorance as being the mental formation that's responsible for that conditioning. So unpleasant arises in conjunction with ignorance, and that ignorance, I could state something along the lines of, getting rid of this unpleasant thing is what's going to make me happy. That's the kind of view. It's a view in the mind. And that is what conditions this tendency to move from unpleasant to aversion. And so this belief, this view, this ignorance, that is a mental formation. That is the constructor that's responsible for that tendency to move from one to the other. So when ignorance is not arising with unpleasant experience, that tendency towards aversion falls away. It doesn't happen. So this is again seeing how the mental formations are conditioning each other. The conditioning power of ignorance is phenomenal. And it's such an area that it's so much under our radar. We just don't really see it. But in some ways, fortunately, we get to see the aftermath. So, you know, the unpleasant experience, the aversion arises, you know, so we see the aversion. The aversion kind of hits us. It hits us and it's like, oh yeah, that's a mental formation that I can feel that, I can be with that. And we can know in that movement that belief, or that there was a belief or view there, ignorance was there for that to happen. We don't have to go digging or searching for it. But over time, we can begin to actually notice and see that when we make a movement towards something that's pleasant, it's conditioned by the belief that, yeah, that's what's going to make me happy. If we notice that tendency towards when we notice something unpleasant, that tendency towards aversion, it's coming along with this subtle, it may not appear even as a conscious thought in the mind, but it's got this subtle belief that, yeah, need to separate in order to be happy. So we can see this conditioning power of these mental formations at work in our minds. And that's what we explore here, is just what is available to be known. So many times when I was practicing with Sayadaw, I would hear him offer some kind of a teaching, and then I'd go off and try looking for something he talked about. He said he gave me a talk one day on how perception and delusion were connected. And I went off like trying to find perception and delusion and like wound myself up and into a kind of knot. And he said, you know, nothing I say is something to do. It's a description of what you might notice. And I pointed to that this morning, you know, that we can talk about experience and describe what happens in processes in our minds. And it's basically wisdom. It's support for understanding and recognition. The place that freedom happens is in actually seeing these processes working, not in hearing this, writing it down, remembering it, checklist. Okay, yep, I saw an unpleasant phenomenon today. Okay, you know, it's not about thinking about it. And yet what my hope is with this kind of talk is that it creates an interest in, a curiosity in, and exploring this conditioning nature, this constructing nature of our experience. The more curiosity, the more our minds are kind of willing to hang out with this messiness and this stuff that goes on, even the unpleasant stuff. You know, we can just be with it and kind of, again, being a naturalist. It's like, oh, that's what happens when anger arises. That's what happens when love arises. So I want to talk a little bit more about belief, because this is such a potent constructor in our minds. Beliefs, you know, when we think about where do these mental formations that we have come from? I mean, when we're looking in our own hearts and minds and watching it, we often see that a lot of our habits, our patterns, and we use that phrase a lot, habits and patterns, habits of mind, we use that phrase a lot. Basically, this is another word for mental formations that happen a lot. So these patterns of mind that happen a lot. And when we notice patterns that happen a lot, mental formations that tend to repeat for us, we often can see how they are conditioned by our history, Now, they're conditioned by our families, our relationships from our past, things that happened to us. So we can see how they themselves, these constructors, I'm talking about these mental formations as being the constructors of our experience, but they themselves have been constructed. And this constructing nature of our system, of our organism, is not a self-contained system. It's not just in here that mental formations are arising and constructing mental formations and other things happening here in our minds and bodies. We interact. And so my mental formations impact you. My beliefs, my views impact others. And so a lot of where our mental formations come from is from our culture, from our families. We are like little sponges, especially early on in our lives, just absorbing mental formations, absorbing beliefs. This is the way life works. This is the way it is. And so much of our views, opinions, ideas, beliefs come from not just ourselves thinking about the world, but from what we've been told. And not only what we've been told, but how we've seen the world function through watching other people interact. So some of our views, our opinions, our beliefs come from our own personal experiences, our own personal relationships, our own history, you know, how we were treated as a child in school. You know, some of our conditions. This is one that kind of occurred to me at one point when I was giving one of these talks, that when I was a kid, I was really short. I was the shortest kid in the class, and I had really bad eyes. And the teachers always put me in the front row. So I got very comfortable there. You know, that's where I always sat in school. Those were conditions, my short height, my poor eyes, and the teacher deciding to be helpful and putting me in the front row so I could see. And those were conditions that constructed a comfort in being in the front row. And then as I grew up in life, you know, I kind of forgot about this conditioning and ended up, usually whenever I went into a room where there was rows and a kind of platform, like, you know, teacher-student kind of thing going on, I would sit in the front row and, you know, created some idea about, well, this is because I really enjoy learning, and this is because I'm like, you know, such a good student. And, you know, it's like, it was all conditioned based on being short and not having very good eyes. And yet we can create whole identities around things that, you know, come from just kind of basic biological conditions. And so these are kind of personal views that can arise based on our personal conditioning. And then there's conditioning that happens through our culture. And these cultural views, beliefs, can be even harder to see. You know, so there's some cultural, family cultural things that we may have. You know, this is how we are at dinner. This is how we eat meals together, things like that. And then the broader culture that we're largely associated with conditions our minds. These kinds of views, the familial views, at least for me, the views constructed by how a family interacts, that was a little, you know, relatively easier to begin to recognize, well, not all families work this way. You know, I'd go over to a friend's house at dinner and it's like, wow, this is different. They do things differently here. And so I, you know, began to see that this is a construct of this family. The broader cultural views are harder to see because pretty much everyone you come into contact with behaves in the same way. And so these kind of beliefs, views, ideas are even more deeply conditioned, I think, because, and more hard to see as beliefs, because so many people that we've interacted with have shared that view or shared that belief, and we haven't necessarily come into contact with people who have a different cultural domain to see that it's just a construct. It's not the way reality is, it's the way this culture is. And so these can be very hard to see through, these kinds of cultural conditionings. And they have a huge, this beliefs along these lines, you know, they have a huge capacity to create suffering. If we just explore the concept of, and the beliefs around race, for instance, how different people feel about people of a different skin tone than them. You know, race itself, as I understand it, is nothing biologically. There's no biological basis for race. It's simply pigmentation in the skin. So there's not anything fundamental about race, but what we call race. And so this race itself is a concept. It's a perception. It's an idea. It's a construct of mind. It's got no actual basis in reality. And yet we have views and opinions and beliefs based on that idea. And the beliefs around that have created so much suffering around oppression and privilege. You know, racism is a set of beliefs in the mind creating very real impact in our world, very real suffering. And so again, the importance of recognizing beliefs, recognizing the conditioning power of beliefs. And again, suffering is a guide for us. You know, it's not only our own suffering that's a guide for us. When we're wandering through the world and we see, for instance, something that we do that may create harm or suffering in somebody else. If we see that, you know, it may not have been our intention to harm that person or to create suffering in that other person. It may not have been our intention. And yet, seeing that something that we did contributed to somebody else's suffering, maybe there's something to learn there. Maybe there was a view or belief that was unseen that would be worth looking at, worth seeing if there's something to uncover. A kind of a simple example of this, not simple, but a kind of a example of how this works, how beliefs shape our world. I listen to this podcast every now and then called Invisibilia. Its premise is that there are invisible forces that shape our lives and shape our world, and that's all what we're looking at here. You know, these forces that they're not even they're not tangible really, but these forces in beliefs. You know, beliefs really have a very potent force in our world. And so, on this program, at one point they were looking at how thoughts shape the world. And there was a research study where people were invited into a lab. They were science students, probably psychology students, and they were invited into a lab to train some rats, mice actually, I think they were mice, to train some mice to run through mazes. So this is a very familiar thing if you're a psychology graduate student, to train mice to run through mazes. And what was really going on in this study wasn't that the students were learning how to run mice through mazes, but the cages that the mice were in each had a little sign over them, almost like an incidental sign that said something like, "These mice are less intelligent. These mice are more intelligent." And there was no difference. They were all the same, like, you know, they were just randomly sorted into these cages. There was no difference between these mice. But the students going in, it was just a sign, you know, just a sign on the cage. And, you know, they'd take the mouse and train it to run through the maze, and they were told, what they were recording was, how fast does this mouse run? How fast does this mouse learn to run through the maze? And in terms of what might be considered a kind of intelligence of the mouse, how fast it learned to run through the maze, it wasn't even close for these two populations. Those mice that had the intelligent mice on the cage zoomed through those mazes. The mice that had not so intelligent, they really struggled. All that was going on was a belief in the student's mind that these mice are stupid and these mice are smart. In some of the videos of the, and trying to understand how this happens, you know, how does this happen? Is it really the belief? You know, is it just an idea that somehow like travels through, you know, woo woo, and like, you know, you're a stupid mouse, you know, is it that? the videos of the labs, the rats, the students showed that they treated the intelligent mice with more care. And that is what they imagine, or that's what they expect, created the difference. This is kind of an example of how beliefs have a very tangible impact on our world. And this is a self-fulfilling prophecy here, essentially. But it's not because of anything inherent in the mice. It's because of how we interact with each other. And so beliefs are incredibly potent. So what we're doing here is exploring what we're noticing, and you know, opening to these processes of body and mind, essentially opening to the aggregates. It's one way to look at what we're doing here. The aggregates, these five processes of body and mind, are carrying on. They are essentially how our being goes through the world. Feeling feels, perception perceives, constructing constructs, consciousness knowing. So these five processes are going on all the time, whether we're mindful of them or not. And so what we're exploring is opening up to, it's like the moment when mindfulness returns, five aggregates are already happening. Constructed tree, some like nature of the five aggregates, the conditioned nature of these processes is on display, waiting to be seen. Mindfulness returns, that's what we see, the five aggregates at work and how they relate to each other. This practice awareness and wisdom. Awareness and wisdom being skillful constructors, constructors that tend to take us in the direction of freedom. That's a lot of what we're cultivating here. Cultivating, strengthening those skillful constructions. And as I mentioned yesterday, it's like those two together, they both, I talked about the kind of magic power of mindfulness and wisdom, how it creates the conditions for those states of mind that tend to take us to suffering to get weaker, and how it tends to create the conditions for those states of mind that tend to support us moving towards happiness, well-being, ease, to get stronger. And so this practice is essentially moving us in the direction of more and more skillful construction in our minds, in our hearts. The weakening of greed, aversion, delusion, that begins to move us in the direction of freedom. The strengthening of the qualities that come along with mindfulness and wisdom, including compassion, generosity, love, concentration, tranquility, patience, these move us in the direction of happiness. And wise attitude, you know, the allowing attitude, it's almost like that allowing attitude begins to almost like pull all of those beautiful qualities along in its wake. And we can begin to recognize them, begin to notice them, begin to recognize while we're noticing some challenging state of mind, you know, oh yeah, patience, that's what's being cultivated right now. That's the wholesome quality that's being cultivated right now. So our practice stays simple. And yet reveals so much amazing complexity of how our minds work. And we could never figure this out ourselves. In a way, I think we couldn't. Yeah, that's one of the definitions, in a way, of a Buddha. Someone who wakes up, understands all of this without anybody ever having told them any information about how all of this works. And yet we need help, I think. Most of us need help in this process of waking up to recognize, begin to recognize, you know, what are the skillful constructions? What are the unskillful constructions? And yet the feedback that we get as we bring in awareness and wisdom, it's a very immediate kind of feedback. And it can be very simple also, that feedback that points to is this wisdom or is this delusion? I would say, I trust this feeling in the heart. When it's wisdom, it usually feels soft and connecting and not rigid. The heart has a quality of receptivity when wisdom is present. And when ignorance is present, it tends to feel contracted, tight, rigid, bound. And so sometimes we can just use that as a simple guide for us around wisdom or delusion. And so trusting the practice, I hope in some ways, this is maybe a funny thing to say, but you know, this topic is kind of complex. It's got a lot of detail to it, and there's a lot of moving parts to talking about this constructing nature to experience. And so what I'd like to encourage you to do is forget it. Don't try to remember it. Don't think about it. Just do the simplicity of the practice. What I've seen happen in my own practice sometimes is I'm sitting doing this kind of, you know, just simple, obvious practice, and then suddenly I recognize something, and it's like, oh, that's what that teacher meant. It's like it connects to something that I've heard. And so, you know, it doesn't get lost. It's kind of like a rainfall, you know, just like it's just this information can just be like a rainfall, just seeping in. You don't have to consciously think about it or remember it or try to look for any of this. Just open to aware, what's here. What's my relationship? It will reveal to you this amazing magic show of the body and mind. Let's sit for a minute.